Calling state affairs to order at 3:01 p.m. Tuesday, March 23, 2021, in the Max Grunberg Room. Members present, Representatives Klayman, Story, Eastman, and myself, Chair Christ Tompkins. Many thanks to Tom with the LIO and Sophia in House Records. And we've got two items on today's agenda. We've got House Bill 44, CS Version B, as adopted by committee. It's the third hearing, and it's my intention to just charge the bill from committee, if that's the will of the committee. We also have House Bill 118 from my office. It'll be presented by Lindsay Burke, and we also have Department of Corrections available for questions as a sort of continuation from the last hearing on House Bill 118. So we can take things up in that order. For House Bill 44, there was an amendment deadline yesterday at 5 p.m. No amendments were received by the deadline, or period. So just a glimmering example of excellent legislation that nobody wants to change at all. Congratulations, Representative Thompson. I think at this point I'll take the legislation up for final comments from the committee. Maybe before I do that, Representative Thompson, care to make a comment or... Great. Okay. Comments from the committee on the legislation as a whole? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Christ Tompkins. I just appreciate, obviously, the bill went through the associations and worked really hard, did their homework, and it looks good, and talked to several other people about this bill who are accountants, and I'm going to be voting to move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Sterling. Let the record reflect that Rep. Vance joined us at 3:03 p.m. And Representative Eastman.
Thank you. For the record, I wanted to put out that the only outstanding concern that I've received deals with the definition of reports. And that was briefly discussed in committee previously. I don't know that we have a good answer to the issue. Certainly the definition of reports in statute with the bill is very broad. It deals with things like even so much as offering an opinion. And I want to make sure going forward that that the language matches our intent as a committee, that the nature of the accounting practice is not what we're trying to change by broadening up the requirements for people who are not currently, you know, part of accounting to need to go and get licenses in order to issue reports, since those reports are no longer being limited to financial statements. I mean, previously, when it was a report on a financial statement, everyone could see it deals with accounting. It should probably deal with, you know, the licensing requirements. But since we're removing that, I think there's still a little bit of ambiguity. So I just wanted to voice that as a concern that I hope is addressed later on.
Noted. Thank you, Representative Eastman. And also let the record reflect that Rep. Kaufman joined us at 3:04 p.m. And Reps Vance and Kaufman were doing final comments on House Bill 44, if either of you feel compelled to put anything on the record. Representative Klayman.
I would just note two things. One is I appreciate the sponsor bringing this bill forward. I think it's a good bill. I think it's really important on some of our most the professions that have a lot of consumers using those professions for services, whether it be individual tax returns that accountants are doing or whether it's some of the largest businesses in Alaska, maintaining up-to-date standards for those professions, I think, is really important. And I think it's important that we as a legislature recognize that. On the lighter note, I found that our discussion about may and shall is interesting, but it may be that the accounting board may never deny an application, even though they have that authority. But I don't think that whether it says may or shall will make a difference in terms of their doing an effective job. So I think not making any amendments is consistent with what we've learned. And I would just note, in contrast to Representative Eastman, I do think that the discussion really reflected that the definition of report is consistent with the scope of reports that we would anticipate accountants to be providing within the traditional scope of practice, and that this does not expand the kinds of reports they can provide is beyond the scope of their traditional practice. And so I think it, at least as one member of this committee, I believe the language of this bill reflects my intent in terms of giving reasonable ability for accountants to provide the very kind of reports people may come to them and ask for, and that this keeps them within their scope of practice but doesn't expand beyond the scope of practice.
Thank you.
I will be pleased to support the bill.
Thank you, Representative Clayman. And seeing no further comment, I'll just, before entertaining a motion from the Vice Chair, note that the fiscal note is $5,300, all of which are covered by the licensing fees from the board. So zero UGF impact. And Representative Clayman, a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to report committee substitute for HB 44, version 30-LS0302/B, out of committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the motion carries, and House Bill 44 is discharged from committee. And I think at this time we'll just continue on with House Bill 118 and circulate the paperwork while we're going, if that suits committee members. So for House Bill 18, this is the second hearing in committee. Thank you, Rep. Thompson. Have a good day. House Bill 118, and where we left things off last time is we had Ms. Burke available, as well as Kelly Good, Deputy Commissioner of Department of Corrections, answering committee questions. And Deputy Commissioner Good is unavailable to join us today, but in her stead is Laura Brooks, Division Operations Manager with the Health and Rehabilitation Services section of Department of Corrections. We also have Don Habiger with Juneau Reentry Coalition. He's the community coordinator. A bevy of experts available to answer committee questions. Are there questions on House Bill 118? Rep. Vance.
Well, you know, I know that I'm always quick to have questions, so I don't mind if others who are not the first in line can go before me. So I will wait.
That's very chivalrous. Rep. Kaufman.
Thank you. Not so much a specific question, or through the chair, not so much a specific question, but I continue to just have concerns with the execution of this as pertains to safety, security, all those things that we talked about, whether or not the computers would be safely, you know, one term, sandboxed, so that the negative potential effects are mitigated, the safety, security concerns, all those things. I just don't have visibility of how that would be managed, and it's just an area that I continue to wonder about. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Kaufman. I think that's actually an area it might be helpful to hear from the department a little bit on. And I might just sort of use that as a cue for Ms. Brooks, if she has any comments on that subject, and also let the record reflect Rep. Tarr joined us at 3:10 p.m. Ms. Brooks, if you can hear us, please go ahead and put yourself on the record and offer any comments on that subject Rep. Kaufman spoke to.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is Laura Brooks. I'm the Division Operations Manager for the Division of Health and Rehabilitation for the Department of Corrections. We have heard several concerns raised throughout these hearings regarding the safety and the security of these tablets. And these tablets are created with a multi-layer security matrix. They are tried in systems much larger than ours. It's a secure platform that lets the inmates access only approved content without being able to access even their own settings or the internet. So these are tablets that, while there are specific programs that can be downloaded, it doesn't provide them with direct access to anything outside of that very, very secure network. The tablets themselves also have been designed to be tamper-proof and to meet correctional safety standards. So I guess that would be the quickest answer to the concerns that have been raised.
Follow-up, Rep. Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, is there a certain brand or a specific vendor, sole source for this? Is this a commodity item? Can you explain the supply chain for these tablets a little bit? Thank you.
Through the chair to Rep. Kaufman, I will try. There are just a handful of vendors that provide this service and provide these tablets to correctional centers. They've been doing it for a number of years. I know they have been kind of put through their paces, as I said, in systems much larger than ours. It's not something that's widely accessible. They are built specifically for the correctional environment. And then, as I said, that secure platform is something that has been designed and kind of fine-tuned over the years by these very specific vendors who are very familiar with the safety and security practices of correctional centers.
Follow up.
If
possible, I would like to have the name of the supplier so I could do some just searching, a little bit of review to see if there's any, I hate to use this term, but horror stories associated with the implementation of a program such as this.
Through the chair to Representative Kaufman, we can pull some of the names of the vendors for you.
Thank you, Ms. Brooks. And please, go ahead and circulate to the whole committee when you share that information. I'm just going to run with your offer up, Vance. Rep. Eastman, a question.
Thank you, and through the chair. Just to follow up on Representative Kaufman's question, when you say that they are built specifically for the corrections environment, is that built hardware, or is it the software that's built with that in mind?
Through the chair, both. The actual tablets themselves are designed to be tamper-proof, and then the software that is a part of those or is a part of those package are also specific to corrections, and they endeavor to meet those correctional safety standards as well.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
And is there a policy in place, or do you anticipate creating policies in the future by which an inmate could, abuse the piece of hardware and lose access to that? Or how does that generally work? If, they're tamper-proof, but somebody really insists on tampering with them, what's the impact of that kind of behavior?
Sure. Through the chair, we don't have policies and procedures in place specifically for these types of electronic devices at this point. We do anticipate developing policies specific to this or adding to existing policies, but we do have existing policies in place for when an inmate, let's say, is engaged in hobbycraft and misuses some of the materials that are accessible to them there. There is a disciplinary process and sanctions that come as a result from that, and we would anticipate the same thing would be in place for the tablet usage as well.
Thank you.
Rep. Vance.
Yes, thank you for that. And I also was able to kind of organize my questions. Ms. Brooks, does the department have any means on hand to be able to immediately utilize the opening up of, if this bill were to pass, how you would immediately utilize this without the tablets that you're looking to obtain? And what is your anticipated demand? Because I've heard of concerns of a future fiscal note that we want to keep in mind with this. But could you explain, for the benefit of the public, how this would work within the prison system and how it plans to be used in the future?
Through the chair to Representative Vance, there's a lot of options that are open to us. For example, and I think some of these have been touched on already, but if we're able to go even to a degree of paperless access, say, for example, for grievances, submitting commissary requests, even being able to submit a request to see medical or access their medical records, of course, that saves on staff time and expedites the process. So that's one area we might look into. Certainly educational content, access to law library, e-books, things of that nature. those would all be part of what we would develop along with the policy and procedure for inmate access. As far as means on hand to immediately utilize this, you know, I think the way the bill is written, it does allow us to perhaps provide some other access that right now we don't have. And so, for example, one of the things that has been kind of slowing us down is access to GED, being able to provide access to some of the GED services, and that would be something that would be supervised by staff. It wouldn't necessarily be on a tablet, but with some of the changes to the wording in this bill, it might allow us to expedite that process. So that's just one of the examples that I can think of for right now.
Follow up. Do you have how many tablets, you know, what kind of fiscal impact do you anticipate the need being for these tablets that you're looking to provide?
Through the chair to Representative Vance, most of the vendors provide the tablets, and then there is those tablets then come in with pre-approved content and services already loaded onto them, and then there is, and it depends on the vendor. They have it set up, the fee structures are set up very differently. So some may have a subscription, some may have other means for that, and so it really would depend on the actual vendor to determine what that would look like.
I had another follow-up and I forgot, so I will wait and then circle back around. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Of course, thanks, Rep. Vance. Rep. Kleeman.
Ms. Brooks, thank you for joining us. I actually took a moment while some of the other questions were going on. I did a simple Google search about tablet access in prison to see what came up. And I found, very quickly, I found a website of a provider called GTL. The website is gtl.net. It's GTL Tablet Solutions, Transforming Correctional Facilities Through Technology. And they have all kinds of things that they offer. But this is a reminder that we sometimes lose track that there's actually a number of businesses that are very much directed towards providing services to the correctional industry nationwide. Is it just tablets, or are there a number of other providers that actually have focused their services on the corrections industry, both public and private?
Through the chair to Representative Clayman, I believe that there are a number of vendors who provide a variety of services specific to the correctional environment, whether it be tablets or MP3 players or any number of other things. There is that correctional market out there, and there are vendors who have found that niche and have developed things, again, very specific to the safety and security standards that need to be met in a correctional setting.
Follow up. Is that also true with things like medical services and medical records and things that aren't just tablets, but some of the other services that you all contract for? Do you often contract with vendors that are specialized to services for corrections?
Through the chair to Representative Clayman, we do. You know, one of the examples that you kind of alluded to would be, for example, electronic health record. You know, we determined that it would be very important that we purchase an electronic health record that was not built for a hospital or a clinic and try to make it fit the corrections or correctional medicine. So when we purchased our electronic health record and when we look for electronic health records in the future, we're going to look for one that, you know, is specific to the correctional environment, because it is very different and there are special needs. And just, you know, I think the same applies to things like tablets or computers. It is a niche, and there needs to be a very special understanding of the security needs. And so that there are vendors out there who do specialize in that for that very reason.
Jen, one last follow-up.
Yeah.
Is the reason that corrections hasn't gone further with any kind of computer access for inmates because the current statute basically flatly prohibits virtually all of it?
Through the chair to Representative Clayman, I do believe that is a big part of it, yes. We have been very limited in what we could offer and what we could provide.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Yes, thank you, Chair Christ-Tompkins. And through the chair to Ms. Brooks, if that is all right. And I appreciate being here today, because I've been fortunate to hear you at other times about the importance of your division with health and rehabilitation. As you have said before, that most people who are currently in prison re-enter our communities, and you want them to be successful. And I'm looking at, my question has to do with what, and having use with these tablets helps provide them with updated skills for being successful when they re-enter.
Through the chair to Representative Story, thank you for that question. You know, really, when we are working on further developing our reentry unit, our education and our vocational programs, we are recognizing that more and more we want to be able to reach the inmates in our care in a variety of ways. Certainly classroom instruction is important. Certainly self-study materials is important, you know, in the form of books. But we also realize that, you know, there are other ways that we could be reaching them, and in doing that through, say, a tablet, providing them with educational classes that they can download, educational instructional videos, other types of study materials, looking at reentry courses online, but downloaded, pre-approved and downloaded onto those tablets. Videos of there's so many videos out there, for example, of offenders who have released to the community, who have done well and have very good first-person advice on how to reenter, what you need to be aware of, and providing, you know, more regular access to those types of videos could be a really important part of our reentry program expansion. In addition, we may be able to assist offenders in applying for Medicaid while they're still incarcerated through the tablet process. So there's a number of ways that we could look at expanding our education and our reentry program through the use of the tablets and the materials and services that are available on those.
Just one follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Story. So how about things to do with vocational skills such as coding and things in the IT field? Does this have that capacity to do that, or is it much more limited?
Through the chair to Representative Story, I will have to say I haven't looked that far into what types of specific vocational programs are available for download. I would, of course, we would be very careful in the type of IT training that we do for the inmate population, obviously. But one of the things that we do here is, you know, they're not, so many of them who have been with us for an extended period of time, they're not familiar with computers. They don't know how to use a cell phone or even apply for jobs online. And so this might open some of those doors to us, not so that they're applying for jobs online, but so that they may have a simulated online job application that we can teach them how to use the tablet in order to fill out those job applications and things like that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story. And we've gone around the horn, so I'm just going to ask a couple of questions, put myself in the queue. Ms. Brooks, I was wondering if you could actually expound on that last answer to Representative Story's question. I'm not sure I had quite sort of put two to two, but in some ways the correctional facilities are a bit of a time capsule, personally speaking, and people who might have been incarcerated 30 years ago before widespread internet access, kind of reentering a totally foreign world, digitized world. Could you speak a little bit more to what you've observed in terms of reentry of inmates who've maybe served longer terms and the world has changed a lot through the...
Sure.
Go ahead.
Sure, to the chair. So, you know, we do hear from the inmates who are both in our custody and those who have released, where, you know, they talk a lot about what the struggle is from having gone to basically no electronics when they were first incarcerated to you know, now all of a sudden applying for jobs and setting up appointments and everything is online based. And so although these tablets, again, would not allow them access to the internet, there are simulators, things that they could practice without direct access to the internet so that we could assist them with learning how to do that once they get out. And then I think the other piece, that, again, that's really important is being able to hear from folks who have been where they are, who have left the Department of Corrections and have gone back out in the community and have hit some of these roadblocks. And so whether that is through a tablet exactly, you know, with videos of those inmates speaking, you know, one-on-one, or, you know, we're looking at other opportunities to bring video conferencing into our facilities, not just through the tablets, but, you know, maybe it's a Skype meeting or something like that, so that we can, again, help these individuals recognize what some of the challenges are going to be, people who have been in their shoes, how they were able to overcome that, and, you know, maybe even some real-world advice as to what you should be taking advantage of while you are in custody, because it may just help you when you get out. And hearing that from somebody who has been incarcerated can really, really go a long way. So there are a number of programs out there that could be loaded onto these tablets that would be accessible then to them much more easily than maybe we have access to right now.
Thank you, Ms. Brooks. And another question, is there any scenario in which Department of Corrections would, you know, have tablet use that allows for, like, it's not like air-gapped and, you know, for strictly for educational materials or training or simulations, but is there any scenario in which there would be sort of interpersonal communication where an inmate would have text or email access for communicating with the outside world in a controlled or an uncontrolled fashion?
Through the chair, so far the department is, you know, we're trying to take this one step at a time because this is going to be a big change for us. So that's not something that we've really entertained at this stage of the game. However, I can tell you that there are other DOCs that do have an email type access. Again, not direct communication. And I couldn't even begin to explain to you how it works. That's beyond my electronic understanding. But the programs that are designed for these tablets, they have an algorithm that is intended to pull out high-risk words, phrases that could be code or gang-related. And these algorithms are constantly being updated and evolving so that they can ensure that those messages that do go out to the individuals where they're supposed to go, and that they are screened. Very similar to how our officers screen the handwritten mail that goes out of our facilities now. So that is something that is out there. It's not something that the Alaska DOC is at a point where we're ready to go to that point. But there are some of those opportunities that are out there.
Thank you. I think going back around the horn, Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Ms. Brooks, I'm curious if you've thought about any performance metrics that might be applied to this. So if we, you know, extend tablets or other devices, have there been any thoughts about how we might measure the success of the program in terms of the key benefits that we hope it will provide?
Through the chair to Representative Kaufman, I think there's a number of different ways that we could look at that. Certainly, you know, going paperless, again, for submitting grievances and commissary requests and requests to see medical, you know, that can absolutely save on staff time who has to take the time to read and process those and then determine where they're going to go. It could also expedite the process. You know, I could see where a request to see medical, instead of going into a box, getting picked up, getting taken down to medical and being put into a basket, if that gets sent directly from a tablet to the medical office, you know, that certainly would expedite the process as well. So there's likely a number of performance indicators that we would look at to see, you know, where else is this benefiting the department in terms of staff time and efficiencies.
Follow up.
Thank you. Through the chair. Yeah, so those are some internal efficiencies. I would urge you to think about, you know, the bigger picture goal of if we're onboarding people with life outside of how those benefits could be measured, to be sure that there's actually benefit of the program. You might actually find some negative impacts. If you make communication easier, you'll get a whole bunch more of it. It may be simpler to sort through, but I'm suggesting take a look at the big picture of what the core achievement of this program would be, and try to think of what you would measure in order to assure that it delivers benefit for the cost incurred. Thank you.
And Ms. Brooks, I'm just maybe tag on to that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but recidivism is arguably a key indicator here. And would I be mistaken in suggesting that?
To the chair, that certainly is a big indicator for a number of areas. And again, if we are able to provide additional education, additional reentry services, our hope absolutely is that will drive down the recidivism rate because they have more access to those programs. And one of the things that we learned during COVID is that access to the outside treatment providers, reentry coalitions, case managers, all of that is really critical. And what we learned during COVID is that without that in-person contact, it becomes more and more difficult to connect individuals to the outside. So, that's something else that the department will look at is how can these tablets benefit us all on a much greater level when we're looking at connecting folks to the communities before they get released.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm really supportive of this bill, and I really appreciate the opportunity to just add some comments because in the area that I represent, I have a lot of neighbors who've been impacted by the criminal justice system and just some very compelling stories of individuals. And I think relevant for thinking about this is a couple that I had as guests at a constituent meeting a couple years ago when we were specifically talking about reentry and restorative justice. And these are individuals that had prison terms of one was 28 years and one was 30 years. And so their reentry was so significant. I mean, the entire world had changed while they were on the inside. And just hearing, what it took and how important the reentry services were and how this is a connection to that before they're released, it just really solidified just the power of the rehabilitation and the just the need for us to really ensure that a second chance is given because, since they were both released back into the community, both working full-time jobs, one had recently bought a home in my district and was proud to be a homeowner and taxpayer in the community of Anchorage, all very positive. The other individual was working again full-time and contributing. And so, these bits, I think, are just so important to getting us there. And the last thing I would just say in thinking about this is just, for me, important to remember that so many of the people who are in state custody are also victims themselves and came from, disadvantaged backgrounds and did not have, I guess we shouldn't just expect that they would have had opportunities to education or job training or resume writing. That very may well be the reason that their life sort of veered into the direction that landed them in state custody or in prison for a long period of time. And so to further sort of deny them any opportunity to make, the most of their life, just feels like the wrong thing to do, that, we have an opportunity to, where we can overcome any of those other places and times that have failed and try to get them on that path. And we know it can happen, so I hope we can make it happen here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Representative Story.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I also believe we have Don Haberger online today, and I believe he's been listening. I'm wondering if we can't ask if he could add to what his hopes are for access to tablets currently now, because I know he probably has an idea of what he hopes would come from this.
Yeah, absolutely, Representative Story, and Don Haberger is available for questions, and we'll just use that. Mr. Haberger, if you heard Representative Story's prompt, please go ahead and put yourself on record and offer any comments.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. For the record, my name is Don Haberger, and I'm community coordinator for the Juvenile Reentry Coalition. and to Representative Story's question. Quite frankly, Ms. Brooks did a wonderful job of encapsulating some of the things that coalitions are interested in, and particularly in improving state law so that we can continue to have access. And some of the things that have been mentioned that we are hopeful comes to fruition is that interpersonal connection. And what I mean by that is an opportunity to begin working with an individual prior to their release, whether it's reentry case management, whether it's assistance in providing connection to employment. One thing that many of our communities have is employers that are very willing to work with those that have a background with incarceration, and getting those folks connected, getting them ready for an interview can all be accomplished through online access, through this improved access. Need to be a little careful there, because I realize that it's not the same that you and I are used to when we talk about online, but it is. Some of these tools can improve that access, and really that's what the coalition is interested in. We want that reentry experience to be prepared and executed with success once they get to our communities.
Follow up. Yes, Rep. Kaufman brought up a good idea to look into, and that is keeping track of the outcomes and the data we have. And I know our recidivism rates are, you know, the number one thing we look to. But does any of the reentry coalitions have certain data that they look to look at the success upon for successes?
Through the chair, Representative Story, yes, our reentry case managers work with the Department of Health and Social Services, and for each person on their caseload, they will track successes. They will also track those things that are not properly working. And what I mean by that is, for example, if they're going to a certain treatment provider, and that individual is seeing a success in whatever treatment they are seeking, then that gets noted, and we build now a database that indicates that these kinds of treatments produce better results. And in time, we hope to have a robust set of data so that whether you're reentering in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Mat-Su, Dillingham, or any of these other places, we know better what's working. Now, one thing you can't forget is there's always the human dynamic, and anytime you're working with humans, it's not precise science, but that's what we are hoping to accomplish through our data.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Story. At this point, and not seeing any questions immediately from the committee, we noticed public testimony today. So I'm going to go ahead and turn to public testimony and open it at this time. We have a number of individuals online from around Alaska. And we'll start here in Juneau with Katie Boats. Ms. Boats, if you can hear us, please put yourself on record and go ahead and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Alrighty, thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Katie Boats, and I'm here in Juneau, Alaska. I am cautiously against this bill. The reason why I say I am cautiously against this bill, because I have been victimized here in Alaska. As a kid, I was, I believe in 2019, I shared with the Senate Judiciary that I was raped in my home at the age of 12. So when I hear, as a person who has been victimized and gone through the court process of putting someone to prison, that they may have some access to a laptop for whatever reason, I'm cautiously thinking of other victims who have been traumatized by different crimes in Alaska. It does not give me an ounce of clarity or an ounce of calmness to my nerves when I hear that, you know, it's something brand new and it can be installed in each of the prisoner's cell, I believe, without exactly knowing what the prisoners can and cannot do on these tablets. These days, the internet and, you know, technologies are on the rise. Internet cyber hacking is on the rise. And if there is a will, there is a way. So if a prisoner has the mindset to find a way to bypass all of these securities that, you know, the prison guards have to get onto the actual internet and to hack someone or to use it as a cybercrime or what have you, then they will find a way to do it. And that is very, very concerning. And I just hope that if you guys are to pass this bill, it will not enter the prisoner's cell, but in a more controlled group setting where there will be cameras on every single monitor so that the prison guards can have complete access to what the prisoners are doing, and so that if a prisoner were to hack into the actual internet to, say, attack, to look for, you know, underage girls when they get out, or to, you know, cyber attack a state government entity, then that the guards would be able to know firsthand.
Ms. Butz, so if you can wrap up your testimony.
Yes, sir. So as a person who has been victimized in the state system, I ask you guys to be cautious about this bill and be victim-oriented. And I just ask that you guys have a very controlled group setting. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Boats. We also have Don Habiger in Juneau, who is also available for questions. But Mr. Habiger, if you have any testimony, you're welcome to provide it now, as I see you in the queue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've answered questions, and I really don't have anything more to say. Thank you for the opportunity, however.
Thank you. And finally, in Juneau, Carmen Lowry with ANDVSA. Ms. Lowry, please put yourself on record and feel free to present your testimony in 2 or less minutes. Can you hear us, Ms. Lowry? See, nothing coming through on our end, but we'll circle back to you. Go to the other testifiers. We have there's another testifier from Juneau, Christina Love. Please go ahead and put yourself on record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Hello, thank you so much for hearing me. My name is Christina Love, L-O-V-E. I'm here in Juneau, Alaska. I'm calling in support of House Bill 118 related to access to identification and digital technology in Alaska's prison systems. Upon leaving prison without a government ID, I'm incredibly blocked access to housing, jobs, and supports. Each week here in America, about 10,000 people are released from the state and federal prisons around the country. Their successful reintegration into the community may depend on how quickly they can get valid identification. It's a major hurdle, and the process to get an identification has become even more cumbersome in the communities, especially during the pandemic. When people are incarcerated, especially for long terms of life, the government ID that they had entering prison, like a driver's license, may no longer be valid when they are released. Yet this small piece of plastic is needed for many people's basic life necessities, like housing, employment, medical care, banking, and for those who need it, government benefits along with food programs, which can also cause collateral consequences to their children. One of the biggest barriers that I myself face, as well as the people I have worked with, is the government ID. Really quickly, I'll speak to the digital technology in Alaska's prison system. This has been a huge hurdle for bringing higher education. We know that education is huge for prevention, as well as accessing and staying in contact with their community and loved ones. Thank you so much. I am supporting House Bill 118.
Thank you, Ms. Love, for your testimony. Let's see. We'll go up to Fairbanks. Linda Setterberg. Please go ahead and put yourself on record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Hello, this is Linda Setterberg, and I am from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm with the Fairbanks Reentry Coalition. I'm the community coordinator. I am calling in support of HB 118. I believe that what our men and women who are coming out of incarceration, 90% of them will be coming out into our communities. It's really important for them to have connections with the community, access to technology, especially computer skills. We found in our reentry program that many people do not have even basic rudimentary computer skills and are unable to access even the treatment providers, telehealth, Zoom meetings, anything that would connect them with treatment once they get out into the community. We believe that education and employment are enhanced by having access to technology as well as treatment and telehealth. My personal story, when my own son was incarcerated, having a phone call on a regular kept us connected and was so good for his mental health. He was incarcerated on and had pled not guilty, and in fact he wasn't guilty, but he still spent a great amount of time in jail. And so I just, as a parent and as our community coalition coordinator, it's really important for me that we give Alaskans everything that they need to succeed, because I found that just recently, we've seen, since our reentry program started in Fairbanks, we have seen over 200 returning citizens. Our recidivism rate is about 11% compared to a 60% recidivism rate. Granted, it's just people leaving our program after 6 months, but during that 6 month time, when they have all of the supports in place that they need and have been prepared for reentry, there was a lot of success and there are a lot of great stories. So I just wanted just to weigh in and tell you that I'm in support of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Setterberg, for your testimony. We'll circle back and see if we've got better luck with a phone line. Carmen Lowry in Juneau, if you can hear us, please go ahead and put yourself on record and present your testimony in 2 or less minutes.
Thank you all very much. For the record, my name is Carmen Lowry, and I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Very appreciative for this opportunity. Thank you, Chair Christ Tompkins, and to the committee. I will say I wish I could be there in the room with you all. I know that's not something we can do now. The Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, we're the federally recognized state domestic violence and sexual assault coalition. We are a membership-based organization and governed by 23 community-based domestic violence and sexual assault agencies. I'm calling in today to say that we are very supportive of efforts to be able to make sure that people who are incarcerated and are reentering into communities have the skills that they need and the support that they need and access they need to do so. In particular, I am bringing to your attention, there's a small element within the bill that's been deleted that we have some concerns about. And if you go to Section 4, and it starts on line 22 when the new language is introduced, which, you know, the use of a computer may be approved to facilitate the prisoner's rehabilitation or the prisoner's compliance with the reentry plan or case plan developed under Alaska Statute 33.30.011, including use related to employment, education, vocational training, access to legal references, reference materials, visitation, or health care. All sounds really very important. The one thing that we were wondering about is the reason that there was the deletion of the language that said, and may not be used for any other purpose. From our perspective, you know, when people are leaving incarceration, sometimes there are attempts to reach out and to contact former victims. Sometimes there are efforts to harass former victims. And we really felt like that in this bill, and it was a safeguard, if you will, for victims, that this would be a place to make sure that the access to these tablets or these computers would be contained within those areas that actually facilitated the rehabilitation of the case plan. So one of the things we would like to ask is for you all to think very carefully and to think and to consider what may be, you know, if that language could be brought back in, what might be the reasons that that language is not in. We do see it as a safeguard for victims and to make sure that they know that the person who might have abused them or harmed them earlier, yes, they're getting the support they need, but there's also a real strong awareness that they can't use that support to harass them or to contact them.
Thank you, Ms. Lowry. And last online, we have Barbara Mongar with the Matsu Reentry Coalition. Ms. Mongar, please go ahead and put yourself on record and present your testimony.
Thanks very much. For the record, my name is Barbara Mongar. I live in the Matsu, and I am with the Matsu Reentry Coalition. I am the coalition coordinator. Thank you for hearing my testimony in favor of House Bill 118, Expanding Prisoner Access to Computers. The Matsu Reentry Coalition consists of a collaboration of individuals, community stakeholders, public and not-for-profit agencies, faith-based and business partners who are united and committed to reducing recidivism among returning citizens to the Matsu. The Matsu Reentry Coalition's mission is to promote public safety by identifying and implementing strategies that increase former prisoners' well-being within the community and reduce the likelihood of their return to prison through recidivating. I am calling in support of HB 118 to expand allowable use of inmate access to computers to include reentry planning, health care, visitation, and legal reference material. Prior to COVID, our reentry coalition and case managers had access to doing regular inreaches into the prisons. However, due to COVID, this access was cut off. If we had access to start reentry planning with the prisoners and have them sign up for health care and other services prior to release, it helps them and their release go more smoothly. If a person who is released from prison has a successful reentry into society, they will be less likely to recidivate, which would increase public safety. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mongar, for your testimony. And that completes all the testifiers we have online. So this time I'm going to close public testimony. And I was copied on correspondence between Ms. Lowry, who posed that question, and this morning Department of Corrections provided an answer to that question. So I'm going to go ahead and read the Department of Corrections response to the question Ms. Lowry had asked, which is the language deals, so this language is identical to what was on the record last year in the bill that was in Judiciary. So nothing has changed or been deleted from the language last year, but there was a CS adopted in Judiciary, which I think is maybe what might be referred to, but that action did not occur now or in this legislature. The language deals with what can be offered an inmate via programming. If the language remains, then the department is restricted to offering the inmates the programs only listed in the bill. If the language is removed, then it allows the department to adjust programming with the times. As you know, things change all the time, and we would like the flexibility to do so. It doesn't directly deal with victims, and the department remains vigilant in protecting all crime victims. So I think we can maybe get more engagement from the department and other testifiers at a future hearing, but just to sort of close the loop on that point, which I think will be important, we may want to further examine. So I know we're running close on time. I'm glad we could get through public testimony. And I also just want to note for the record that ABADA Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse has a letter that I think should be on all members' desks as well regarding House Bill 118. So that wraps up today's hearing. I do want to, Thursday is bills to be noticed, and Jeff Stepp and I will be in touch about what that agenda looks like, and then we have a hearing on Saturday as well. So more to come, and at 3:58 we will adjourn State Affairs.